Hello, all. What you're about to listen to is the last episode of the Saw Something Scary podcast to ever be recorded. As you'll hear, at the time it was recorded in January of this year, I had some ideas about how the pod could continue. However, those plans didn't work out, and thus it's time to close the door on the podcast. On behalf of Derek and I, let me say another thanks for being the best group of podcast listeners ever. We were continually blown away by the caliber of listeners we heard from through the podcast. One other update. We have refunded all money gathered through the podcast since our last episode update. Thank you to every Patreon who supported us. Again, you were better than we could have ever imagined. Our Facebook group will stay up. We have different mods assigned who can take that thing forward or, well, whatever y'all want to do with it. And personally, if my other commitments allow, I plan to upload the Patreon episodes we recorded over the last couple years to the show feed as a way to say thanks to our long-term listeners and also put a bow on our run. As long as the hosting and the feed holds up, you'll be able to listen. All right. One more time. Thanks for a great run. Derek and I wish you all our best.
Guys, what's going on? Derek and Jeff here with you for a bonus episode here on Patreon. Reports of our demise have been greatly exaggerated. We're back. Jeff, what's going on, man? How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. It's been kind of a tough run with some sickness, and we did have the blessing of a new baby. All those things came together, landed pretty hard on us. But I think we're getting out on the other side of it. So we're thankful and
Good. Glad
to be back here.
Deal, man. Glad to hear it, and congratulations on the new addition.
Thank you.
Cute little dude.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I got to see him right out of the oven, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, you were one of our first visitors.
Yeah.
He's doing everything he's supposed to be doing. He's growing, you know, things are going as they should.
Yeah. Well, good deal, man. That's good to get to be back in here talking movies with you. And we're going to be talking about last year's Hulu movie Run with the incredibly talented Sarah Paulson. And so I guess let's just dive into it, man. Wahlberg!
What? No!
Spoiler alert.
It's taking me a minute to get my Sauce of the Scary Bones working again.
Yeah, I hear you. I appreciate you recommending this one. I don't know that I would have caught it if you hadn't said to, and this has been a real... I don't know. It was a treat. I mean, it's not anything revolutionary. It's not going to change the world, but I was thoroughly impressed with this one.
Yeah, I was too, man. I really enjoyed it. Again, it comes from our guy Anish Giganti, who wrote and directed Searching, which was a movie that you and I both doted upon when it first came out. As a matter of fact, I went back and rewatched that yesterday.
Oh yeah, I would imagine that's a treat.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since I saw it in theaters, and it was on FX yesterday, and I was just able to catch it, and it was on demand, so I went back and watched the whole thing, and man, it's such a good movie.
Yeah, well, that one and this one has kind of made me believe that this creative team is like, you know, we talked about it with Freaky and Landon, that he kind of has this horror comedy recipe figured out. Mm-hmm. These guys have small setting horror, domestic horror. They've really got something there. And I'm assuming that they can keep whipping out a batch of this every now and then, and I'm going to be delighted by it.
Yeah. Yeah, man. If we can get one of these every 2 or 3 years, I'm down.
Sure. And I assume that studios are always going to be ready for that, because I can't imagine these are huge budget productions, but they land, they satisfy, people keep coming back to them. Like, it's evergreen content. You know, you're going to do what you just said probably multiple more times over the years. If you're able to just, Searching, I'm looking for something to throw on. Sure. And I'll do that with Run as well.
Yeah, for sure. It's really good. I was trying to look up and see what the budget on this was. I'm not for sure. I know that it worldwide brought in $3.5 million. That obviously, I don't think takes into account what Hulu probably paid for it.
But, sure.
But still, that's a pretty good amount of money.
Oh yeah. And I mean, it's just a different, it's a different world right now for movies. And so If you can get this done, get it landed on, I don't know what you can do theater wise, but get it landed on some kind of streaming service and let that be fed by streaming revenue. I think that's probably going to be a model that a lot of creators and a lot of studios and a lot of services are going to be looking to sync up with. So I'm assuming this is a success.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think anytime that you can get your movie distributed on a major platform like Hulu, you're looking at a pretty big success for it.
Yeah. And I assume, you know, of course, I've never checked into all the financials or the defaults, but there's got to be some kind of residual thing that keeps the money coming your way, too, as long as that's in rotation. So more power to them.
Absolutely.
And honestly, if you're going to spend money on something and you're going to try to make a movie that people like and keep coming back to it, it's really hard to go wrong with Sarah Paulson as the feature, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, she's having a really good horror run right now, too, man, with Ratchet that came out on Netflix. And then this, I don't know if you've seen Ratchet or not. I watched the first couple episodes. It wasn't for me, but I've heard good things about it from other people.
This is the nurse from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Is that right?
Yes, sir. That's right.
Okay. No, I haven't seen it. I hadn't. That just doesn't initially appeal to me, but if she's in it, I may have to check it out just to make sure I don't want to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. She does a fantastic job in it, like always. But for me, it was just like, I'm good.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I didn't know that the actress that plays Pam in Searching was also in this movie.
Oh, I didn't know that either. How did I miss that?
Yeah. Yeah. She plays Nurse Cammy in this movie.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. I guess that makes sense.
Well, hey, man, don't beat yourself up over it. I was just literally looking through. I was on IMDb and the like still photos came through and it was one of an Asian nurse and the doctor. And I was like, man, after watching Searching yesterday, I was like, man, that looks like the mom. So I just went and did a little research on it just to make sure I was right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, familiarity is a good thing. And you get refreshed right before you watch the next installment, I guess that. It would lead to like, oh, hey, here's a detail I might have missed.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of actresses, what do you think about old Keira Allen here? I don't know that I've ever seen her in anything else, and I thought she did a really bang-up job.
Yeah, I thought she was great, man. I can't think of anything else that she's been in. If you look at her IMDb page, she was in a short about 7 years ago called Ethan and Sky. But yeah, I thought she did a really great job of this, and I think it's really interesting and probably high time that it's happened, but like Hollywood is starting to use disabled actors for disabled roles. You know, Keira Allen is legitimately been in a wheelchair since 2014.
Hmm.
And so I thought that it was, I mean, we've talked all the time on the show about how much representation matters. And I think that it's good that they're allowing people with these kind of disabilities to play, to really kind of live their truth on stage or on screen.
Right. Right.
But yeah, I thought that she did a great job. It's to me, it's difficult to go toe to toe with someone, the caliber of Sarah Paulson.
Sure.
And I think that there are some scenes where she tops her, like that ending scene is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to talk about implications from that one too. But I'm with you as a young woman who, just doesn't have the seasoning that Sarah does. I can't imagine that Keira, doesn't feel some kind of intimidation, or I guess I would. I'd want to compete. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'd want to step up to the challenge, but, whatever she needed to do to get there, she certainly got to. And like you've just said, the fact that she, I don't want to say like, steals the scenes from Sarah, but that she just is her equal or more is really remarkable for any actress, particularly one with just comparatively few projects under her belt.
Yeah, absolutely. I really do hope that this opens the door for her to be able to do more things.
Yeah. Well, she, you mentioned her previous short. She was a good casting find. I read the IMDb summary. I'll read it to our listeners. Real quick, she was prepped for Run by that previous short. So Ethan and Sky is the name of the short from 2014. The summary is a coming of age story of Sky, a young girl who desperately flees from her home to escape a vindictive and emotionally abusive stepmother. And then she crosses paths with Ethan, who is coming from an alcoholic father. They realize they can rely on each other and find strength from each other. But anyway, clearly the previous work helped her with this one. And having not seen Ethan and Sky, I assume she has built well on what she learned from Ethan and Sky, because she's awesome in Run.
Yeah. Yeah. Chiganti didn't have anything to do with that short, did he?
You know, I don't know. I didn't check that out.
I'll look it up here real quick.
The casting director did the right thing. You know, while you're looking that up, I assumed when, and this is maybe a bad thing on my part, but I had assumed watching the movie that they had they'd cast an actress who had use of her legs full time, mm-hmm. particularly because of that, the physicality where she has to get out of her bedroom and crawl across into another one and all that. And I thought, like, that's a lot to ask of someone who can't use their legs, you know?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. when I realized that, no, she uses a wheelchair for mobility, I was super impressed by this young lady's grit and commitment to her task.
Yeah, absolutely. She's, again, like I said, man, I think she's really, really talented, and I want nothing but the best for her.
Yeah, for sure. Did you find anything Chiganti connected with Ethan Sky?
I did not.
Okay.
No, it's a guy named Dan Headley, wrote and directed it. So okay. I guess somebody saw it and said, hey, that's the girl.
Mm. Well, that was the right choice.
Yeah.
Well, let me give you one connection that I found in this that blew me away and that I hope you'll find as interesting if you're not aware. And our listeners will, too. Did you know that there's apparently a real life case that this movie has some kind of relationship to?
I did not know that.
Yeah. So let me give you the details. And the reason I'm so blown away is, as our listeners know, I'm a true crime fan. And I feel like I know about these high profile true crime cases like this one is. But I hadn't heard about this one ever. And to find out it kind of formed maybe the background of this film blew me away. So I got this from the AV Club, who said that Run likely takes cues from a real-life Munchausen by proxy case of Gypsy Rose Blanchard. And so if you'll bear with me just a minute, I'm going to give you the Wikipedia details here.
So, yeah. Well, I know about Gypsy Rose.
Oh, do you? Okay. How do you know?
Yeah.
How have we never talked about this?
Well, I mean, you know, they did that series on her on Hulu about Gypsy Rose.
No. See, I'm still out of the loop. So there's a series about Gypsy Rose on Hulu?
Yeah, absolutely. Give me just a second and I'll look that up. But also, a lot of that stuff with Gypsy Rose happened near where I live.
Okay. I knew it was Missouri. I didn't know how, I just didn't know my geography well enough.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I drove by there on my way to Kansas City. A buddy of mine who lives in Missouri went with me to Kansas City and he was like, hey, that's where the Gypsy Rose killed her mom. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, right over there across the way from those trees. That's where it happened. I was like, are you what?
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's called The Act and it's on Hulu and it is, who's in it? Patricia Arquette.
Oh,
Patricia Arquette plays, Dee Dee. And then, Joey King plays Gypsy Rose. And it was really good, man. I finished it up, during the quarantine, but yeah, it's interesting. I would definitely give it a shot if I were you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't know why we've never talked about Gypsy Rose before.
That's crazy. But, you know, every now and then something passes the night. If our listeners aren't familiar, let me catch them up and then we can mm-hmm. take a moment and be like, holy cow, it's terrible. This happened in real life.
Yes.
So June 14, 2015, sheriff's deputies in Greene County, Missouri. Find the body of Claudine Dee Dee Blanchard face down in the bedroom of her house just outside of Springfield, lying in a bed in a pool of blood from stab wounds inflicted several days earlier. There was no sign of her daughter, Gypsy Rose, who, according to Blanchard, suffered from leukemia, asthma, muscular dystrophy, along with several other chronic conditions, and had the, quote, mental capacity of a 7-year-old due to brain damage she had suffered as a result of her premature birth. So after reading troubling Facebook posts earlier in the evening, concerned neighbors notified the police, reporting that Dee Dee might have fallen victim to foul play and that Gypsy Rose, whose wheelchair and medications were still in the house, might have been abducted. The following day, police found Gypsy Rose in Wisconsin, where she traveled with her boyfriend, Nicholas, who she'd met online, when investigators announced that she was actually an adult and not suffering from any physical and mental health issues, which her mother claimed she had. Public outrage over the possible abduction of a severely disabled girl gave way to shock and some sympathy to Gypsy Rose. Further investigation found that some of the doctors who'd examined Gypsy Rose had found no evidence of the claimed disorders. One physician suspected that Dee Dee suffered from Munchausen syndrome by proxy and was, you know, basically doing what Dee Dee was doing to Gypsy Rose. Dee Dee had changed her name. They suspected that Dee Dee had poisoned her stepmother, who had confronted Dee Dee about how she treated Gypsy Rose. And yet, you know, all these people continue to play along and participate. Apparently, the family benefited from a lot of different charities like Children's Mercy Hospital, Habitat for Humanity, Ronald McDonald House, Make-A-Wish Foundation. Like, all these big groups are orbiting around this whole made-up bag of crazy. and it just is allowed to go on. Last thing from Wikipedia. Dee Dee had been making her daughter pass herself off as younger and pretend to be disabled and chronically ill, subjecting her to unnecessary surgery and medications and controlling her through physical and psychological abuse. Dr. Mark Feldman, international expert on factitious disorders, stated that this was the first case he had experienced in which an abused child killed an abused parent. And the thing that just blows me away about maybe the whole thing of it is that Gypsy Rose ended up pleading guilty to second-degree murder and is serving a 10-year sentence that started in, I guess, 2018. Her boyfriend was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, there's just so much there. One, how it's allowed to happen, how many people are participating in it. But then when the young lady and her boyfriend try to get away, I'm not saying that murder is okay. There shouldn't have been consequences. It's just wild to me that, like, this was done to her, and so now she's in prison, and the guy who tried to help get her free is in prison. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like there's literally nothing good that came out of the entire ball of crazy.
Yeah.
And every bit of that was new for me as I started digging into this movie.
Really?
Yeah, every bit of it.
Huh. Yeah, I just assumed, I don't know, I just assumed that that was a much more mainstream story.
Yeah, yeah. And it probably is. It's just one of those ones that somehow missed my radar. But, man, the truth is stranger than fiction, dude.
Yeah.
In reading the details there with Gypsy Rose, you realize, like, Run is a scaled-down version of what actually happened in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not normally what we think of with cinema, but man, the crazy on that is incalculable.
Yeah. Yeah. They say that Gypsy Rose is actually pretty happy and optimistic about the future.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, it's just the murder makes it all so much more complicated, but I hope that young lady can have something on the far side of all this tragedy. If that, you know, is, something justice affords her, because she apparently was treated, you know, saying it was, she was treated inhumanely doesn't even scratch the surface.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope that if it says that she's not up for parole until 2024, I hope that in her time in prison that, you know, maybe she can be afforded a therapist, some kind of counselor.
Yeah.
Maybe try to put some of that trauma behind her so that when she does get out, because I mean, she's turning 30 this year. So if she does, I mean, she'll be 33, you know, if she is granted parole in 2024. So, I mean, she's got her whole life still ahead of her.
Sure.
And I hope that if that's the case, then she can kind of, it's as crazy as it sounds, but, you know, put the past in the past and try to have a normal life afterwards. Honest to God, I don't know how you would live a normal life after being subjected to all that, but I sure hope that can happen.
Yeah, I hope there's something good for her in the future, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the future, I showed this to some relatives, you know, who they don't love horror the way that I love horror, but they like a good recommendation every now and then. So I put them onto this, and I just kind of gave them the broad strokes and said, "Tell me what you think." And they came back and said, yeah, that was a really, really solid movie. It felt like, you know, it felt like in some ways a movie we'd seen before. Mm-hmm. But there was enough fresh to kind of keep us locked in. And I think that's fair. I thought about even Misery back in the day being part of the DNA of this movie. HBO Sharp Objects not too long ago. Even the Munchausen section from The Sixth Sense is all kind of part of the batter here. But I think Paulson getting shot and then the daughter turning the tables was interesting enough to like freshen up the form for me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Did you as the horror prognosticator see the, I guess, the twist coming there?
Yeah.
When she's in the hospital and she gets shot, I just thought, well, this is how she goes out. This is how they take the character off the map.
Yeah.
But, you know, coming back to see her in the hospital later, it was a surprise to me. What do you do with that ending, Derek? Do you like that? Does it give you warm and fuzzies, or do you think it's more dark?
It's definitely more dark. I think for me, the saddest part about it was that she doesn't seem like she can stay away from her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not even the, I'm going to give you a taste of your own medicine type thing. Like, I guess the vindictive part of me was like, yeah, she's getting what she deserves. But the part of me that felt the most sorry for Chloe was the fact that she kept going back and she kept calling her mom.
Hmm.
And it just, you know, you have this. Not only has she been affected by, Munchausen by proxy, but you also have a little bit of Stockholm syndrome in this thing too.
Yeah.
And even with the implications of being like, oh, I'm only coming back to torture you. You're still going back. You're still telling her about things. You're still talking to her about your life. There's still a sense of attachment there. And you hate to see anybody still be attached to somebody who put them through so much trauma and difficulty.
Sure. Yeah. The ending really challenged me. I like revenge and I like people getting what's coming to them. Like that's part of what I like about the actual genre. And I really thought, you know, if this woman's in prison, she's in her medical, you know, situation at some kind of psychiatric hospital and her daughter's just thriving without her, that is its own kind of revenge, you know, that when she comes to see, when she comes for her visits, Paulson's character has to realize that this person is perfectly fine without you and even better, you know?
Right.
And then that they have like, you know, that the movie ends with basically Chloe becoming a version of her mom and doing to her mom what was done to her. I hadn't thought about sort of the Stockholm nature of what you're talking about there, but just the fact that like Sarah's wickedness had been replicated within her, you know, It didn't feel quite so much like, oh, I've turned the table on my abuser as it did. Like I've become the same thing you are.
Yeah.
And, it's challenging. Like it got my mind working and I found it interesting, but I can't say it sits well with me. You know, it's not satisfying in that way.
Yeah, no, I agree with that too. I think that I understand what they were going for with it, but it does almost feel like, I mean, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, or maybe this is just overflow of what you just said, but to me, it almost feels like that Sarah Paulson's character wins in the end.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. I'm sympathetic to that idea.
And I hate that part.
Yeah. I mean, she has transformed that girl into her own image, you know, and
yeah.
I know that Sarah's character wouldn't feel like she won and certainly Chloe's doesn't either, but there has been there's been a replication. That's icky. It leaves you feeling dirty.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely, this movie's definitely not wrapped up in the nice bow that Searching was.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
You know, at the end of Searching, you get the happily ever after ending. And you come out of it with, you know, warm and fuzzies in your tum-tum. And in this one, you borderline want to take a shower after it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a satisfying movie, but it leaves you with this, like, dread or this unease, you know, which some people I know that's what they're looking for. So, yeah. That can be a strength for some people, but I guess I just wanted Chloe to come out a little less demented.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, you're rooting for her through the whole movie.
Yep.
You know, mm-hmm. and you want her to maintain this aura of goodness. And instead you get what you get at the end of the movie. And you're like, ah, that feels a little slimy.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Listeners, you can let us know what you think about that ending. I'd be curious what you guys think too.
Yeah, for sure.
Just wrapping up, I don't have a whole lot left, but I wanted to run a couple things that I thought weren't kind of tightly packed down. And I got okay. a question for you too at the end of it that's related. The first is I didn't think the movie was quite as airtight as Searching in terms of plot.
Uh-huh.
Did you find it a stretch that Chloe would just get somebody on the phone eventually who would Google drug information for her?
Yeah.
I just thought that was a big and I realize now that with the Gypsy Rose stuff that she apparently met some guy online. So maybe there's a version of that, but like it's different to cultivate a relationship with someone online and get stuff versus mm-hmm. just I'm randomly calling for drug information. Like I think if I got that call, I'd legitimately wonder if I was in legal trouble if I helped out.
Yeah. Yeah, there's very much a plot device is very much like, oh, we've got to get to this next part in the show. So we're just going to 555-1111. Yeah. Oh, that didn't work. 555-1112.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird. I wasn't a fan. Also, maybe I'm jumping ahead, so you tell me, but the pharmacy scene kind of took me out of things too.
Dude, that was the other one I've got. Even bigger.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought that was even worse.
Yeah. It just felt way over the top. And it felt like, it almost felt, you tell me if I'm wrong on this, but to me, it almost felt like when we started to realize that Patrick Bateman is going crazy in American Psycho and he like feeds that person to the ATM or whatever. Do you remember that part?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I know that it's not that like, I know it doesn't stretch that far, but that scene does feel very broad in a movie that does not feel very broad.
For sure. And just so much of the like straining of credibility that like, oh, she cuts the line and the pharmacist watches it happen. And then she has this crazy cockamamie story and then she changes on it. And then it's because it's a game. And like, I don't know, man, it was just any one or two of those I might have been able to like swallow that the pharmacist would have played along. Mm-hmm. But when you have five or six of them and then mom shows up freaking out,
mm-hmm.
it seemed like they tried to get too much done there.
Yeah. They just tried to shoehorn a lot in because they realized that they were running out of time.
Yeah. Yeah. They needed some way for her to get to this and this is what it had to be. So let's go.
Yeah.
Now it's set up. I thought Paulson's most brilliant scene, honestly, when she's in the kitchen, like, and you think she's talking to the pharmacist and she's like trying to figure out how to tell the pharmacist to tell her daughter everything's on the up and up.
Yeah.
I thought that was really well done. So, I mean, we got some payoff from it. It just, man, it didn't work on the way there.
Yeah.
Well, the last thing, just the question for you. Clearly, there's mechanisms in society that allowed what happened to Gypsy Rose happen. And some of that shows up here. Like, I don't think everybody has to be educated the same way. So, like, homeschooling is an option if that's what the family needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here, it was used against this young lady. And I was looking at that thinking, like, well, you know, sometimes homeschooling is what a kid needs. Like, they've been abused in the public school or, you know, the school can't accommodate their needs. And so it's a good thing that families have educational options. And then you start seeing too that like, oh, there's no iPhone, there's no internet. And I get it. The creep of like intentional isolation comes in, starts feeling sinister. But as a guy who's looking at his kids growing up, I've been reading studies where children having unfettered access to particularly the internet, social media through smartphones, there's clinical connections to a sense of social isolation, suicidal ideation. It's one of the primary ways children are exposed to predators.
Mm.
And so I've been looking at this and being like, oh, I get it. I get that these things can be used by a predator against a child. But I also think that we're learning really quickly as a society that unfettered and unmanaged access can also put kids in these terrible situations. And so the movie made me a little uncomfortable being like, oh, it's crazy psychopathic controlling, you know, uber predators like Paulson use this stuff, because also predators on the other side of the fence use the opposite to get access to hurt people. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on that? Like, I think everybody wants to be able to cultivate a society where we're meaningfully connected. But I'm not sure that phones and social media is going to end up being a whole lot better for us than, you know, kids being raised at home, not off the grid, but like not on their tablets all day.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if you have any thoughts about what Run has to say about that dynamic.
It's such a fine line. And I feel weird even talking about it, just because I don't have a dog in the hunt.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's just me. And the last thing I want to do is try to tell anyone how to parent their children.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, I got into a conversation about that the other day and pulled back from it really quick, because I was like, what do I know? You do whatever you feel like is necessary.
Sure.
I'm a dude that's couch hopping right now because I'm in an off season, you know, for my job. So I have no right to talk. But I mean, you do draw some really interesting points with that. And I think now more than ever, it is a very, I guess it is the right thing to say, Jeff. Like, it's a very scary time because everybody wants to be connected, but yet the problem with everybody wanting to be connected is that everybody wants to be connected. Right. You know what I mean? And so as much as you try to shelter or shield your children from this kind of stuff, it's inevitable that it's going to happen. Right. I mean, even with this girl, even with Chloe, like, she found a way.
Yeah.
And so even when your intentions are pure and you're trying to do what's best for your child, which I guess, in fairness, Sarah Paulson's character thought that she was doing the same thing. But I guess that in turn is really the thing about it, right? Like, we think we're doing the right thing for our children, and sometimes our children don't believe that we're doing the right thing. And it's just a very murky gray area.
Yeah. 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 I'm with you, man. As a guy who does have a dog in the hunt, it just doesn't seem like there are really good solutions. There clearly aren't easy answers. Help your kids connect with other people, but not the wrong people. To not get addicted to the technology and let it form them. Like, there's no magic bullet, and I really wish there was.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. As your friend, I wish there was, because I can't imagine the stress that would put on you and Christy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially nowadays, man, you know, it felt so innocent, even though it probably wasn't, but it felt so innocent when we used to be able to log into chat rooms, you know, in the late 90s and talk to people. And now it's evolved it's evolved and devolved at the same time.
For sure.
You know, everybody just wants what's best for their kids, but you also have to realize that eventually you have to trust them and hope that they make the right decisions. And yeah, it's terrifying.
It's a rough one.
Yeah. You know, I've been saying a lot with my nephew while I've been in Tennessee, and he's constantly wants to play Fortnite. Like, he either wants to go outside and shoot hoops with the neighborhood kids, or he wants to go inside and play Fortnite. And I got him a wireless headset for Christmas so that he can, you know, he can talk to his friends and stuff. And dude, there's just some times where I'm in there watching him play Fortnite, and I'm like, gosh, I hope that there's nobody in this like chat room that's going to try to assault him or assault his friends or anything like that. I guess it's pretty tight knit, but it's terrifying.
For sure, terrifying. And again, this is the stuff that this creative team raises for us, right? I mean, Searching did a bunch of that too.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe one of the things we can be thankful for is that there's at least film projects out there that are pushing us to think about it and consider it. That's not a solution, but maybe it's part of the process of getting there.
Yeah, I think so. And I think you have to have these. I think you have to have these kind of movies that will help you raise questions and help you try to figure out what's going on. Because I think that there are a lot of people going back to searching. I think there are a lot of parents who don't know their children when they get to, you know, 16, 17, and 18. Because as you remember, when you were a kid, it was the same way with me. Like, I wasn't home a lot.
Yeah.
During those years, I was at work, or I was off doing some kind of extracurricular activity, or I was just hanging out with friends. And you really do kind of lose that. You do kind of lose that. I won't say relationship, but you grow a lot in that, and you change. And sometimes parents are a little far behind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this movie also can kind of show you obviously the dangers in it. I think these movies are good. You know, I think I've said it before, like, some of my favorite scary movies are movies because they could actually happen.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't Freddy Krueger haunting you in your dreams. Like, this is a parent, somebody who you put your faith and trust into, you know, for the first 18 years of your life, hopefully longer than that, but they're your caretaker, you know, up to a certain point. And this person winds up having a lot of mental problems and a lot of baggage that's not your fault, but you have to deal with it. You know, you get caught in the landslide, and you know, it definitely happens a lot more than I think that people realize. I don't think it's as horrible as this, you know, or the Gypsy Rose situation, but it's out there.
Sure.
And it's good to shine light on it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's well said. That's well said. Well, all right, man. I think that's all I've got on Run. I've enjoyed talking with you about it.
Yeah, dude, for sure. I'm sorry that it it took 16 years to get this one on the books.
But yeah.
Glad to be able to wax poetic with you on it. I think it's a really good one to talk about. I'm glad you enjoyed it as much as I did.
Yeah, yeah, it was a good watch. I'm glad you put it in front of us.
Yeah, for sure. Let's do it, man. Let's answer these questions. Jeff Wright, you see something scary?
Yeah, I think so. When it became clear to me in that, particularly that scene where Paulson is trying to figure out how to manipulate the pharmacist to manipulate her daughter, and I realized, yep, there's no ambiguity left here. I had a bit of horror hit me there, so I'm going to say yes, I saw something scary.
Yeah, I agree, man. I saw something scary as well. I just trying to figure out how deep and personal I wanted to get into this one, and I'm just going to leave it at that. I saw a lot of it brought back a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
watching this movie, but yeah, I definitely, again, just because it's horrific that things like this happen in the real world, and I saw something scary as well. On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put this one?
I think this is a 7. I was very happy with this. It's not.
Yeah,
it's where I started earlier. Not changing the world, but super satisfying movie. Much better than Perfectly Acceptable. Landed well. 7.
Yeah, I'll skew a little bit lower, but I feel the same way. I was going to say 6.5, but I think anywhere in between 6.5 and 7, I think that you're right on top of it. Good movie. One that I'll probably go back and revisit at some point, if not several times in the future. And definitely a little bit more above Perfectly Acceptable Horror, and fantastic performances by the two main ladies in the movie. So
for sure. Cosign.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. Well, you heard what we thought, guys. So we'd like to know what you guys think as well. And you can let us know in the Facebook group at We Saw Something Scary. And we would definitely appreciate any and all feedback on the episode.
Yeah, for sure.
So, all right, Will, that'll about do it. all right. Well, I guess we gotta address the elephant in the room. And we'll do it here on Patreon, just because you guys are family and we have appreciated you. But I have decided that it's time for me to go on down the road. And so this is going to be, for the time being, this is going to be my last episode of Saw Something Scary. Jeff is still in the driver's seat, and he is going to, hopefully, we'll see what the future holds. I don't want to put anything out, but hopefully Jeff is going to continue with the show. But I just wanted to come on here and say that I appreciate you guys. And this has been a heck of a ride. And all good things obviously have to come to an end. But I want to say thank you so much to you guys for listening. I want to thank all the great people that we've had on the show over the years. And most importantly, Jeff, I just want to thank you, man. This has been a real fun way for us to stay connected. And I hope that connection doesn't weaken over the next few weeks and months and stuff. Cause man, it's been great to, I tell you, there's been a lot of times where the highlight of my week has been either meeting up with you in person or getting on the Skype machine and talking about some stupid scary movie. So there's obviously things I'm going to miss about it. And that's the biggest one, but I think it's time for me to head on down the road.
Yeah, man, I get that. It's melancholy. I've enjoyed every bit of it too. You know, it was a project we started as an outpouring from our friendship, and I think that's what's made it such a fun ride. I'm not sure where that ride's going, but like you said, sometimes even good things need to come to an end or change. And so I'm really thankful for the time we've had around this microphone and literally in each other's presence doing it. Really thankful for, like you said, the people we've met through it. I'm really excited for what, you know, the future holds for you. I think there could be great things for this podcast as well. And I've got some ideas on that front too. But that's not what we're here to do today. Today we're to say it's been a good ride. It's been a good run, a good ride. And I'm thankful for it. Thankful for the way it has grown from our friendship and caught up other people. And I appreciate your involvement, man. I'm going to miss doing it with you on the regular. I hope we do it some in the future, but I'll miss the regular nature of the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too, man. And I think, you know, I'll definitely pop back in and do some, you know, special episodes and stuff like that. And of course, you know that anytime that Jordan Peele does a movie, you can't have anybody on but me.
There you go.
but yeah, it's been a great ride, and I've really enjoyed it. And I will miss being able to talk to you. Well, I mean, we'll still talk all sure. the time, but sure. I will miss this aspect of our friendship. But you know, I think that we all know when it's time to move on from certain things, and I've kind of felt this way for a while. And so I would much rather me leave than bring down the integrity or the entertainment value of the show. So I'll be back, but I just won't be around every week. And that'll be okay. I think we are at a time in this podcast where it's time to grow and to change and evolve. And, you know, I went on that huge rant a couple months ago about how Broadway needs to evolve and stuff. And I feel like sometimes podcasts need to do the same thing. So nothing but good things, man. Nothing but good things are coming for everybody. I'm excited to see. I'll still be listening every week, and I'm excited to see what happens with the podcast.
Yeah. Well, we're excited to see what happens with you too, brother. And we'll look forward to
thanks,
hearing from you when you drop back in.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, from the bottom of my heart, thank you guys so much. Jeff, thank you. I love you, buddy. And you guys continue to keep supporting this thing and keep the good vibes going. And, you know, if you guys ever do decide to rent out the drive-in for Halloween, I'll be there.
My man. Well, I love you too, Derek. I appreciate your friendship and your partnership on the podcast. I miss you, brother, but I'm looking forward to the future for both of us. And I'm not going to let you drop out of the old personal life stuff anyway. So you'll still have to put up with it.
Yeah, that'd be fine. I'm looking forward to it. So, all right, guys, well, that does it for me. And that does it for this bonus episode here on Patreon. We appreciate you guys, like we said, and hit us up. He's at Right Jeff. I'm at Derek Zoo. And for the last time for a while, we are out of time. Thank you guys so much for your patronage. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you down the road. But until then, man, remember to stay away from clowns and sewers, blind men with turkey basters, and white people with teacups. We'll see you real soon. Bye-bye, man.